Welcome back to EV News Daily. On the podcast today, Mercedes G-Class EV gets its launch date, Ferrari's battery cell lab, and BYD's next-gen battery. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you what the boss of Hyundai in the US is saying about his competitors, the likes of Ford and GM, and their move to electric. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Wherever you are in the world, EV News Daily is your trusted source of EV information for Tuesday, 9th of April. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. I'm here to save you time, like a TLDR of the EV world. We've been doing it for over 2,000 daily episodes. Check out the podcast on audio platforms, now here back on YouTube as well. We go live at 5 p.m. UK every day. Join us in the comments. That's midday Eastern. Patreon supporters get the episodes as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Breaking news as I sat down to write today's podcast. Tesla has settled legal action at the 11th hour, due to begin today, related to a fatal crash in 2018 involving an Apple engineer driving his Model X whilst on autopilot. Now, I'd sat down to talk about some of the evidence which is going to be was going to be admitted in court, where they had talked to Tesla employees about the pros and cons of autopilot, how it follows the lanes, how it doesn't, if the lines are worn out. Now, none of that will be in the podcast because, like I say, at the 11th hour, Tesla chose to settle and not to have this evidence aired in public. The crash occurred when the vehicle veered off a highway near San Francisco, the tragic death of a 38-year-old man called Walter Huang. The undisclosed settlement was reached before the trial was set to begin just hours later, which centered around Tesla's driver assistance technology. Questions were raised by Huang's legal team regarding Tesla's understanding of how drivers might misuse the autopilot system and the measures taken to mitigate such risks. Now, the incident has put Tesla under scrutiny already. They're facing multiple lawsuits that challenge the safety and reliability of their autopilot features. These legal challenges, of which there are many, in the tens, it's something like 65 or 67, I think, either going through the courts or due to, correct me in the comments if you're wrong, you know more about Tesla than I do. These legal challenges could well lead to significant financial damage if any of them are found that Tesla was at fault. I think a bigger issue is reputational repercussions, and I'll get onto that in just a second for Tesla. Well, the NTSB, that's the National Transportation Safety Board, concluded in 2020 when they looked at this accident that Tesla's technology was partly to blame for the crash by failing to alert the driver to activate braking, and the vehicle itself accelerated towards the barrier and didn't slow down. Court documents unveiled some internal communications amongst Tesla executives and engineers. That's what I was going to talk about today. They admitted in this internal memo that there's an over-reliance on autopilot, both with customers and Tesla's own staff, noting instances of engaging in distracting activities, things like checking their emails because they came to trust the Tesla technology when that feature was active. But there is an interesting thing, isn't there? Their CEO was very, very clear in a public statement he made on the 20th of May 2022, when he said, "We will never settle an unjust case against us, even if we lose. We will never settle an unjust case against us." And the only inference from that is that this was a just case. Tesla will clearly have, in the settlement agreement, some confidentiality, some NDAs. We'll never find out the amount of money, the family, horrible situation for them to go through the court case, I imagine. Maybe they wanted some closure. I don't want to get into that. It's a horrible situation. And they clearly won't ever talk about it. Tesla will never talk about it. But there'll be no liability inferred on Tesla's part. They will have seen to do, have done nothing wrong. But I know lots of people will come back to that clear statement today. We will never settle an unjust case against us. And they just did at the 11th hour. Now, Bryant Walker-Smith is a law professor with expertise in autonomy. And he noted that Tesla's willingness to settle might indicate that to other lawyers, that the company is open to resolving disputes. And the other disputes that are currently going through the courts will probably all be settled as well. Striking that Tesla decided to go this far publicly, right up to the very time they're going about to select the jury and settle. What it does, it says to other attorneys, we'll probably settle. All right, let's move on and talk about CEOs, actually. Many CEOs keep themselves to themselves and don't have a public profile. One of those that I think puts himself out there in the right way is the CEO of Mercedes-Benz and Ola Källenius, releasing a video on the Mercedes-Benz YouTube channel showing the electric G-Class undergoing rigorous testing in the Swedish Arctic. Mercedes is conducting extreme weather testing right now, both in hot weather conditions up to 50 degrees Celsius, and he's a native of Sweden, of course, lives in Germany these days and running a German car company. And they're going back to northern Sweden in Arjeplog, showcasing the durability in very cold conditions. I'm really excited about this vehicle as well. The testing ground in Sweden serves as a location for Mercedes to evaluate their vehicles, along with many other car makers as well. Mercedes set to unveil their G-Class Electric, known as the EQG. I don't know whether it was official or not. I think it was, but it's now branded as the G580. So now we know it's not going to be called the EQG. I think the EQ stuff is just disappearing a bit from Mercedes. The G580 with EQ technology. It's going to be shown off at the Beijing Motor Show, 24th of April, so not long to wait. The G580 will be one of many highlights, like the new plug-in hybrid AMG GT Coupe and the new EQS Saloon as well. First introduced as a concept with the four-motor setup at the Munich Motor Show in 2021, the G580 promises remarkable off-road capabilities and the ability to pivot in place, with that tank turn style thing that we've seen a few car companies do. Rivian said they were going to do it and then quickly gave up because it's probably fantastically hard to do. But I'm sure they've got a team of German engineers working on this. And of course, on the snow and the ice, and the traction is not like doing it on tarmac. So you can do that 360 spinning on the spot thing with all four motors. This vehicle looks like it's the real deal, like a proper G-Class as well. I'll pop some pictures online for our YouTube viewers of the CEO driving it. What we do know, though, energy consumption for the new G-Class is going to be estimated, and the way that they've given it is it's fine. We've got to do some maths with this. They say around 27.7 to 30.3 kilowatt hours per 100 kilometers driven. All right, thank you, Mercedes-Benz, for not making that easy for us. So let's say around 30 kilowatt hours per 100 k's or 62 miles. That would suggest a range of between maybe 330 and 340 kilometers. That's around 200 or 220 miles of range for the all-electric G-Class, because we know it has a 100 kilowatt hour battery. So this is now the Mercedes G580, 24th of April in Beijing. We'll get to see it. Let's talk about a car that I think many people are quite excited about seeing, and that is the Roadster. No, not the Tesla one that's long overdue. The MG Roadster, or Cyberster, as they call it. Now, it's out in China already, and if you want to go have a look, I'd invite you. There's some brilliant Chinese, English-speaking YouTube channels that have reviewed this, and the car looks like the real deal. The MG Cyberster, an all-electric two-seat Roadster seen in Melbourne, in Victoria, according to the website thedriven.io, reporting from Down Under. The third sighting now of the Cyberster on the roads, indicating extensive testing outside of China. A vehicle is moving from New South Wales to Melbourne now. Unique in Australia's market, unique in many markets as well. A two-seat sports car, soft top, electric convertible. Whereas in the UK, we don't have that. The Cyberster has been showcased at various events, like Fully Charged last weekend. A starting price of, we think, around £50,000. That would be around 90,000 Aussie dollars. They do have some spicy stuff in their arsenal, like the MG 4X Power. You can get that for about £36,000. And that gets rave reviews from the kind of motoring press that I read. That, you know, obviously they're saying it's not pure premium, but it's a great chassis and it's rapid in a straight line, and that's what EVs can be very good at. Originally revealed as a concept in 2021, look at the speed at which vehicles make their way to market. Concept out in 2021, shortly after in China this thing hit the roads, and now outside of China, right-hand drive market, Cyberster is going to be reaching potential buyers later this year. Top-tier models will have a dual-motor setup and around 550 horsepower, just over 400 kilowatts, 0-60, 2 miles an hour, 0-100 kph in 3 seconds. Yeah, it's going to be more expensive for an MG and a brand. We still own the MG ZS EV. I've been saying for the last year, I must sell that car, but it's really useful as a family car. And so We've spent our own money with the brand, and you know, honestly, it had a couple of service issues, and they were dealt with promptly and under warranty, absolutely fine. One of the sensors went in the windscreen for the auto lights. There was a wait for that of about maybe 6 weeks. Wasn't too much of a problem turning the lights on and off myself, but you know, supply chains from China were affected post-pandemic, but apart from that, I've always had good service from MG, so I can't wait to drive this one. One of our headline stories today, let's talk about the boss of Hyundai in the USA dropping a few zingers aimed at his competition. The US CEO critiquing his rivals over their commitment going EV. This is Steve Levine writing for The Information in an interview that they did with Randy Parker, US CEO of Hyundai, challenging the competitors of Hyundai and their dedication to EVs. Lots of hot air has been wasted over the last 5 years from the likes of GM, and he says competitors like GM and Ford and the American carmaker saying, we're going to go EV. And then more recently, oh, hang on a minute, we're going to go a bit more hybrid because we can't sell enough of them to our customers. Well, he's pointing out that in contrast to that, that some of his competitors might be scaling back pure EV initiatives in America, whereas, of course, in Europe and China, we're moving forward very fast with EVs. Because of a perceived slow demand, he says that Hyundai's full commitment is in the EV market, emphasizing the importance for consumers to choose a manufacturer that is invested in the development and sale of EVs in the US. And this is a point that I made on our Batteries Included podcast on Friday last week with my friends Tom, Dom and Kyle. We do a separate show on Fridays with our new little project we've called Batteries Included. And I said that, you know, Ford backing away from pure EVs, delaying it. It's talking about 2030 hybrids until then, and the SUV, the three-row one coming in 2027. Any negative talk around EV sows a seed of doubt in your customers' minds that, oh, they're not fully behind it. And if I spend, this is the second biggest purchase we make in our lives, and if I spend all of my money on this car, will it be supported? And do they really want to go EV? Well, Randy Parker, CEO of Hyundai Motors America, saying exactly the same thing, highlighting Hyundai and Kia's ascent to the number two position in US EV sales last year with 40,000 sold. But let's be frank, that is a fraction of what Tesla sold. The number one spot. In the first quarter of the current year, Hyundai ranked third in EV sales behind Ford and Tesla. Hyundai advancing their investment in EVs, $12.6 billion for EV and battery complexes in places like Georgia to make 300,000 EVs a year, starting production by the end of this year. Hyundai planning to invest $51 billion in the next 3 years to advance their moves in EV, R&D, production as well in South Korea. Well, we've known it's coming for a long time, and this Electrek report confirming that Rivian have now closed for upgrades. They've got some vehicles in stock, so it's not as if the customers aren't going to carry on getting those vehicles delivered, but Rivian ceasing their operations at Normal, Illinois for a couple of weeks to initiate upgrades and reduce costs and enhance efficiency, says this report. The company's CEO, RJ Scaringe, talking about the shutdown and how the significant changes will happen in how these vehicles are made, reducing material costs, upgrading and designing the production to allow to be more cost effective, reduce the labor needed per vehicle and decrease the cost per unit. The plant will reopen on April 30th. I've read two reports, one saying 28th and one saying 30th, but it's all there or thereabouts. Over the past year, Rivian has achieved considerable reductions already in cost of manufacturing per vehicle. With these new upgrades, the company anticipates a meaningful reduction in material costs of production. Now, a vehicle that I'm very familiar with from the 1990s, and that is the Vauxhall Frontera, coming back as a new electric SUV, according to this Auto Car report. And I was delighted to see this because I spent many hours in Vauxhall Fronteras back in the 1990s, back when I was working in local radio. We had a fleet of these black, all sign written with the logos down the side. And, you know, but yeah, go back 20, 30 years in local radio. We used to go to things at the weekend and fates and events and music festivals. And, you know, I mean, radio's all changed. Well, I'm not working in radio anymore. And doing, you know, podcasting and stuff. But back then, we had these fleet of vehicles that we'd take out and do outside broadcasts, and they were always Vauxhall Fronteras. And they weren't always the best vehicles, if I'm honest with you. They got the job done, but they were always Fronteras. And that name is making a comeback in all electric, taken over from the Crossland with a new EV version of this coming to at least the UK market. I outside, it'll be branded Opel. Associated with the Citroën C3 Aircross, the smart car platform that they use there to focus on affordability. It'll be positioned against things like the Dacia Duster and Nissan Qashqai, and that would be around 130, 140 brake horsepower, maybe 250 miles of range. That's 400 kilometers. Details are still sparse, but the electric version of the Frontera would arrive in the market around £30,000 or £32,000 this summer. All right, supercar chat right now, and let's talk Ferrari, inaugurating a battery laboratory focusing on lithium-ion battery cell research, aiming at launching their own fully electric supercar by the end of next year. The lab, in collaboration with the University of Bologna, will delve into solid-state technology, how fast they can recharge their Ferraris, how to keep them cool and warm, thermal management, cell safety and efficiency as well, all part of the new CEO Benedetta Vigna's strategy to move Ferrari into the electric era. Very difficult, isn't it, for brands that are known for high-performance 12-cylinder engines and the noise and the drama to go EV. I'm not fully convinced they need to, by the way. Don't shoot me at dawn for this, but as long as 99% of the vehicles that we drive, the working vehicles, delivery vehicles, vans, whatever, go electric, the stuff that we use day to day, what's wrong with having a, combustion Ferrari or Lamborghini? We still ride horses, just not to get to work. And so I don't know why there's so much focus on getting to 100% EV. Let's just do 99% and save some fun stuff for people. And I'm not going to buy a Ferrari, but if people want to, then go ahead, fill your boots, drive on petrol. But either way, named the E-Cells Lab, the research facility intends to move Ferrari's entry into EV forward. Findings will be shared with their battery suppliers. And unlike mass market vehicles, high performance cars like this, like Lambos, like the McLarens, they've always said, we'll never go fully electric. Now you will. The Rimats, of course, which is showing them all how it's done. This kind of battery technology is all about managing the extremes of performance, of charging, of temperatures, of conditions as well. Talking batteries, let's talk BYD, about to unveil their next generation advanced blade battery. Their subsidiary FinDream set to release the second generation of their blade battery in August. This coming from Car News China. The new generation has an energy density of 190 watt hours per kilogram. That's an increase of the first gen's 140 watt hours per kilogram, later improved to 150 watt hours per kilogram. The chairman of BYD, Wang Xianfu, highlighting that these batteries are going to be more compact. They'll be lighter. They'll have the same endurance, though. And the upgraded blade battery will aim to have vehicles on the road that do 1,000 kilometers, 621 miles, at least on the Chinese CLTC, the light duty vehicle test cycle, which is wildly optimistic by about a third, if not more, for real-world conditions. But either way, the point is that around the world, EV batteries are getting better with more energy density. The battery is going to be the most efficient lithium-ion phosphate battery available on the market. And you can either put more of them in and make the vehicles go further, or you can have the same range. If you think, well, this vehicle only needs 250 miles of range for that target market or this price point, then you can have a lighter vehicle with fewer cells inside. Win-win all around. Okay, let's get back to Tesla now and some more positive news for them. See, it's not just the negative stuff I talk about on this podcast. Let's talk about one of the best bits of their business, which is their supercharger team. They knock it out of the park day in, day out. They're unveiling stalls all around the world, and not just, four here, six there, eight there, but properly big sites. And that's good news, not just for Tesla owners and drivers listening to this podcast, but also these days Ford and Rivian, soon Polestar and Volvo. Who knows when GM will pull their finger out and get access to the supercharger network with the J3400 connector. However, the X account of Tesla Charging has posted an update on an advancement in how fast they roll out superchargers, how quickly they are deployed, launching the prefab units they have, which are, it's just so impressive. They're the PSUs, prefabricated supercharger units, and you can get these deployed within 4 days of delivery. Well, a Tesla Charging video online shows the entire process from pre-building to installing the V3 supercharger stalls. The pre-assembly occurs at Gigafactory New York, where up to 12 PSUs are prepared with a concrete base loaded onto a single truck for delivery. They're transported to their locations, they're craned into position and connected to the high-voltage systems. Very rapid setup. Tesla highlighting the largest pre-assembled supercharger site so far has 76 PSU stalls, deeply impressive. Not just the big, you know, one of the biggest sites that I have ever been to see 76 chargers. Now, obviously, you know, Tesla talking now about putting 200 chargers in to certain sites, which is, you know, obviously just next level, deeply impressive stuff. But to have these prefabricated units dropped into the ground, 76 of them in one location. I'm not sure where that was. You can let me know in the comments if you do know where that is. But taking a look at that video online, very, very cool. And one of the things that Tesla just does better than anybody else. But not if the Swedes have their way. Tesla's efforts to expand supercharging in Sweden are stalling because of their fallout with unions. Of course, Elon Musk famously anti-union and saying, well, we give our workers proper compensation and stock options. We've made many people who work for Tesla millionaires, the ones that were here very early and got enough stock through the crazy days of when that was flying. And well, that's his take. Others are more pro-union, and one of those is IF Metall, who, along with the Swedish Union for Service and Communications Employees, the SEKO, and the Electricians Union there in Sweden, are involved in the dispute and all supporting their brothers and sisters in arms, as it were. Now, members of any union in Sweden, anti-Tesla, it appears. So all of these superchargers that have gone into the ground or going into the ground are not being connected to local power grids. Members ceasing connection of superchargers since March the 4th. On the 20th of March, the Electricians Union had their sympathy strike with their other Swedish union members and refused to do anything with Tesla superchargers. The disagreement centres around the signing of collective agreements with companies in Sweden. Now, many of these electric companies, like we have here actually in certain locations, are effectively monopolies, and we're not as unionised here as Sweden, but then you have a monopoly on the electric grid, and then you have workers who say, well, other unions aren't working with Tesla, so neither are we. I mean, there's one specific Tesla supercharger I know about in Lungby that has 20 stalls. It's in the ground. It's about to be connected, and the unions say, we're not connecting it up to the grid. And so supercharging stalling in Sweden. Now, that is, of course, just a stalling of the expansion. Not great for any customers that don't support that union action, because real people affected, of course, they'd love a new supercharger station. And I can imagine maintenance as well. Like, at some point things go wrong and you have to take a supercharger offline. Now, with Tesla, normally that's minutes or hours. If you do, maybe it won't ever come back online until Tesla Sweden sign up to collective working agreements, which I don't see happening anytime soon. And I think many people are still taking in the news from last week. Reuters released a very well-sourced report speaking to several people inside Tesla, saying that the Model 2, so-called $25,000 EV, has been mothballed and postponed, and or at least that platform won't be available for retail customers to buy, but perhaps that platform will be only used for robo-taxis. Autonomy being the new story, along with AI that everyone's meant to be getting excited around. Tesla analysts from Bernstein chipping in now and saying, well, actually, the $25,000 Model 2, the cheap Tesla, is already on the market. It's called a car from China. Bernstein pointing out that this period of stagnation from Tesla that they are in means that people should lower their expectations on what the company will do in terms of vehicles that we can buy until they enter a new growth phase. BYD offers the Seal in China at well below $25,000. And if you think these cars aren't going to be coming to the US just because Biden and Trump are saying, well, we're not going to let the Chinese in, then perhaps, I was going to say, you a little naive, you're fine. Let me say, perhaps I'm a little too jaded. I don't think those Chinese cars are going to be kept out of the US forever. There's an election happening this year and lots of votes to be won to say, hey, we're not letting them in. But at some point, you get an amazing vehicle for 20, 25 grand. And BYD say, hey, well, we're making them in Mexico already. We can get them over the border. You want one? You want one? You want one? It's going to happen, isn't it? But both politicians in the election year saying that they will keep the Chinese cars out. BYD makes plenty of alternatives in the cheaper segments in China. Nobody likes paying taxes, but we all know we have to fund road building and maintenance. Well, New Jersey is introducing a $1,000 registration fee for some EVs, effective from July the 1st, in addition to standard registration charges. Governor Phil Murphy enacted a new law to renew the Transportation Trust Fund, incorporating an annual $250 fee. So it's an annual $250 fee, but that's over 4 years that you have to pay it. But what if you only lease your vehicle for 3 years? Well, that seems desperately unfair because you'll have paid for a year that you've given your car back after 3 years. That increases by $10 annually over 4 years to $290. New EV registrations require the fee to be paid 4 years in advance. So that totals $1,160 by the time the fee peaks. It's aimed at ensuring that EV drivers contribute to road maintenance because they're not paying any taxes on purchasing gas, although they are on things like electricity. And additionally, Governor Murphy has proposed repealing the sales tax exemption, which was in place since 2004. New Jersey's been so EV-friendly lately, they've really not been so pro-EV. Despite these new fees, New Jersey continues to offer certain incentives for EV purchases, although these incentives are subject to availability and may run out before the end of each year. It's pretty complicated, but I'll pop a link in the show notes if you'd like to find out more. And finally, let's talk about the US and China and the EU, what it means for the cars that you and I will be able to buy in the future and the prices that we pay and what will be available in the market, let's face it. China's increased production of EVs and solar panels and lithium-ion batteries is central to new trade tensions between the US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and China's officials. The Biden administration's support for green tech in the US contrasts with China's strategy to expand their production, affecting global markets, including Europe and Mexico as well. For instance, I mean, the Alliance for American Manufacturing released a report only in February, I believe it was, I was reading, highlighting about BYD's launch of cheaper vehicles and how that will affect the US auto industry. China's automotive sector benefits from decades of government subsidies, and China's Commerce Minister Wang Wentao is currently here in Europe right now, and on Sunday night, 2 days ago, was addressing concerns over Chinese EVs, trying to reassure European lawmakers that actually there's nothing to be worried about. Honestly, nothing to worry about. That's our podcast for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for watching. The YouTube version is online right now if you want to. And as always, thanks to our premium partners via Patreon, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and LeasePlan Electric Moments, providing all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Have a brilliant day. I'll see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.